Hi, my name is Tim.
Hi, Tim.
So today, just a couple moments ago, I realized what our topic was, which is searching and fearless, I believe, which is the topic of the convention. So I will start with, I guess the first time I entered the rooms. When I first came to the program was in preteen. And I was at a place in my life where my mom and dad were just separated. We moved from a really, you know, nice home, two stories. Had everything except sanity and serenity. Mm-hmm. And everything that this program gracefully provides, you know, to those that are willing. And so I was at a place where my mind, I believe I was 10 years old, 10 or 11 years old, and I didn't like talking to anyone. I wasn't a social person. I didn't know how to be sociable or have friends. My friends were my sisters. My friends were my cousins. And even then, it was one of those things. I was an Al-Anon at 10 years old, whereas I want you to be my friend, so let me, what can I do for you to keep being my friend? You know, what can I do to make you happy so that you're happier when you're around me? And, you know, it was just natural. You know, this is what I saw growing up, or this is what I felt what was right when I grew up. And my mom was going through her own emotional stuff, and my sisters were going through their own stuff. And, you know, I was in my own world completely. You know, I was failing all my classes. I believe I was in fifth grade, and so my favorite excuse in school was if I didn't do my homework to my teacher, I would say, oh, I'm having home issues. And so I wasn't able to do my homework last night. And my teacher's just like, oh, well, I understand. And so I would do that a lot of times because it got me out of doing my homework sometimes, most of the time. And so I got into preteen, and I heard what I needed to hear at the time. You know, it just slowly started seeping into my ears. I mean, from someone that's just barely learning and still kind of trying to grasp what life is and what is going on and, you know, figuring things out at 10 years old. I mean, so many things can go through your brain at one time. And in the meeting, sometimes, you know, I was kind of the older one, and so I would want to caretake, and if no one would share, I would always raise my hand, and I would think I knew what was best to say, and so I would try to, like, teach all of them when I was just, like, I guess 3 months into the program. Like, I thought I had it. 3 months, I was like, I get it. And there were a couple people in there that are actually younger than me, but they've shown me so much, and I'm still really good friends with them today. And so I was in the program for preteen for about a year, and then I got older, and I went into the big kids place, which was Alateen. And Alateen was really where I got to find out who Tim was. Preteen was the state where I was figuring out what the program was and what it was for and why I was there. And Alateen really showed me that, okay, now I know I'm here, why I'm here and what this program can do for me, but what do I do now with all that information? And so with Alateen, it was very, really tough those years. I believe it was about 6 years I was in Alateen. And I had so many spiritual awakenings, so many battles from my past and from the present and just decisions that I was making and emotions that I had, and I didn't really understand how to deal with them. And so I would just keep going to the meetings, and I would kind of reach my hand out to the Alateens, my friends. Honestly, they are the best friends I have ever had. And just surrendered completely, because I realized at that point, maybe halfway in through Alateen, that I did not know the answers, that I, you know, that I'm powerless over alcohol and everyone else, and over decisions that aren't in my control. And I through Alateen, realized that what was in my control was myself and my serenity and my sanity and my life decisions and how I'm taking in things that are occurring around me. And boy, was that really, really tough. And it didn't just happen instantly. Like, searching, I was, I'm always searching, but at the same time, I'm content with where I'm at, because if I'm not content with where I'm at in my life, in my program, then I can't have more. I like, this is in my brain. You can't have more serenity, or I can't find serenity if I can't have it now, if I can't just accept and let go. And it's really hard. I mean, it was really hard for me to grasp that concept, because when I was 14, I believe, I was living with my mom. I shared a room with my three sisters, two older sisters and one younger sister. And we all shared one very big room. And we each had our own bed, and some of the beds were, like, connected. So, like my feet would be facing my sister's head or something like that. Like, you know, because, you know, we had two rooms, and there was one other extra room, which was, like, the office, but the roof was always leaking. And so it's very, the house had a lot of work that it needed. And so we all shared a room. We all got very close with each other. And almost, we were always in each other's faces, because we were all going through our own lives and our own kind of discovering who we are and not understanding what was going on with our parents and why there was restraining orders and why there was so much chaos, and still trying to discover who we are at the same, or who I was at the same time. And, I mean, I got in fights with my sisters all the time, my older sister, Christina, which I wasn't able to be here today, is one of my favorite sisters. And it's funny because me and her were always head-to-head when we were little. And she was, I guess you could say she used to be very cruel to me when I was a kid. And I used to take it because she was the one that always played with me. So if I played with her, there was always, you know, a catch. And eventually she had her own path that she had to go through, and her own trial and errors. And eventually, you know, through the program, honestly, it would have not even been close to happening if it wasn't for this program, that we have a very strong relationship now. And before I left, I gave her a kiss on the cheek. And it's just, it's so amazing the blessings that I have, and the hope that I'm given in this room, because growing up, there was no such thing as, like, hope, at least in my eyes. You got what was in front of you, and that was it. And if you didn't like it, then tough, deal with it. And so most of the time, I didn't like it. And so I would just, every day, I would wake up and not want to wake up and just be so upset with how my life was and where it was at. And finally, me and my mom, you know, we had our tough times, and so I moved in with my dad. And it was very strange, because me and my dad had a really, he was in my life, but he was very absent. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, if I needed him, if I really needed him, he would be there. But for the little things, he wasn't there. And for the advice, for the conversations, he was only there if I really needed him. And, you know, I can be like, you know, my dad wasn't there all the time. But you know what? My dad was there when I needed him. And I can be so grateful. I can realize that now. And it's a really big blessing. And so I'll just move forward. So in Alateen for about 6 years, I got my license. I grew up really fast living with my dad, because that's just how it was. He was always working. He owns his own business. And so that was a very big battle for me as far as growing up and becoming a man and making decisions that no one was there to tell me how to make except for this program. And I had the support. I had my sisters. I had my mom. I had my dad there. But I had to do the footwork, and I really understood what that meant, because it was very recognizable. I learned that when I was 10 years old, when I first moved, I'm not moved, well, I guess you could say moved, but came into this program, was footwork. And so it wasn't completely unknown to me what that meant when I had to actually do it on my own and grow up. And so moving forward, I graduated last June, I believe June 3rd, and that was a very big accomplishment. I actually graduated on stage, which if some of you know me, that was, schoolwork is not the best thing that I enjoy doing. I'm very good at school and all my teachers loved me, but I never did my work because I was always rebellious that way. But I made it and I pulled through, and I can just be so grateful. I can either look at the negatives or I can just receive the positives and receive the blessings that I had with my mom when I was living with her and with my dad. And the fact that I was able to live with my mom one-on-one, live with my dad one-on-one, and live with both of them one-on-one. And then just completely recognize the struggles that we all went through and then let them go. And not stuff them or hide them or try to cut them off of my life and act like they never happened, because that's what I did in a very, you know, big part of my life, 2 years. I could not cry, I could not feel, and it wasn't allowing myself to, because there was just so much pain that I wasn't feeling that I was ready to go through. And finally, I let it go. And my grandmother passed away last January, or I believe at the end of December. And I had to go to her funeral, and that day I drove from the funeral to a play that I had to put on, direct, star in, write, and I had to perform a death scene. And my little sister was in it with us, and I was the president of our dance production in school, and I was the only guy in the dance thing, which is why I was, I guess you could say, one of the stars, because they needed a guy role. And my little sister was the vice president, and I'm just, you know, I'm so happy. I got to live with her for about a year and a half before I moved out. I moved out about a month ago with my older sister, or my two older sisters. I share a room with my second older sister, which is the one closest to me, which is the one that we were at throats with each other when we were kids, and now we share a room together, and she's the best roommate ever. And I can just be so happy and so grateful and just count my blessings. And I can't even count all of them, because there's too many and I can't keep track. And I'm just going to keep continuing on that path. Right now in my life, I can breathe. I can surrender. I can, you know, be fearless. And to me, I've dealt with so much fear, and that's what held me back so much. And that's what just, you know, oh, I can't do that. Oh, I was actually chairperson at a convention about 2 years ago, and I wasn't even on a committee. And they were just so desperate to have someone with at least, you know, couple years, and it was one of those desperate times, and I had so much fear beforehand, and then something just, like, I guess I got this awakening, you know, that it's okay, like this. I really just, it felt so empowering, and I knew that that was my higher power, that I had found my higher power, and my higher power said, you know, it's okay, and you're getting through this, and this is, you know, something that's going to help you in the end. And sure enough, I was chairperson, and not only in my life did I get so much out of it, but in my program, people around me, the committee, like people that were in my committee that were on their committee for the first time, it was like a completely fresh new committee with Alateens and Al-Anon sponsors. Everyone was new. They've never been on a committee before, and it was like the new generation. We were changing, you know, Alateen and making it, you know, new again. And it was just such an amazing experience. And from that, I learned how to manage. I learned how to take on a leader role. And, you know, the program showed me, and the program and the people that are in the program, you know, which is the program. We are all the program, and it wouldn't be anything without all of us. And so you guys have shown me how to be a leader and how to be a volunteer and how to follow and how to be, a part of a team. And with that, today I am running my own business with my older sister and a friend, Caesar, and we, I'm at 18 years old, going to be 19. I'm already starting to run my own business with these business partners. And it was because of this program that I'm able to do that, that I'm able to not have fear that I might fall or that have fear that of success. And for me, the biggest thing was fear of success, because I felt like I was not worthy of the greatness that, life has to offer, because I was always told that I wasn't, or I felt like I was told that I wasn't, And a lot of you guys, I know that you guys can understand that, and these rooms, just inspired me to do so much, and continue to inspire me to do so much. And I look at the Alateens today that were little kids where I was at, and they are, achieving so much. Little Camper over here, I remember when he first came, when he was a little guy. And I asked him to be on the committee, and now he's a rising star in the Alateens, and it's really exciting, to see everyone grow up, and even the adults. Right now, I transitioned, and it was a pretty tough transition, but I transitioned into Al-Anon last June, the day I graduated. The day I graduated, before I was going on stage, I went into an Al-Anon room with my mom, and I went in the Al-Anon room. I've always gone to Al-Anon meetings with my mom, but it was different this time because I was home. It was that part of my life where I said, Alateen has given me so much, and now it's time for me to move forward in my life, and I have different battles and different greatness that I have, that I'm going to be facing. And, that's no longer with the Alateens, it's with the Al-Anons now. And, I can take all the blessings that I had from preteen and from Alateen and from my past before I even came in the program and just enjoy all of it and love all of it and embrace Al-Anon. And so I've been in the program for, I believe it's about 4 months, and I'm just, just going to all these different meetings and just enjoying each and every one of them and each thing it has to offer. And, I took the first step was, this is a new program to me. Al-Anon is, I was an Alateen before, now I'm an Al-Anon, and it's a completely different program, and so I'm going to take my first commitment. And so I took literature commitment for 2 weeks, and I felt that that's a pretty good start, and I'll take it from there. And not taking too much on my load, because God knows I'm an Al-Anon, and I love doing that and saying yes to everything. So with that said, today I am searching, and I am content, and I am fearless. And I'm fearless because you guys have shown me how to do that. And now I hope that I can show and just express, and with my share, you guys have gotten something out of it. And with that, thank you very much for letting me speak.
Hi, I'm Raquel.
Hi, Raquel.
This mic's scary. I don't know. I've spoken a lot before at different conventions and stuff, but I don't know, for some reason I got really nervous about speaking here this week, so I had to go to a lot of meetings to, I was like, I don't know. It's just weird. I'm in a different place in my life than where I was at, I guess, a year ago, for sure. So, I'm speaking for AA today, but I did start off in Alateen. I started in Alateen when I was 14 years old. So I'll just go to a little bit of background where I come from. My qualifiers, one of my main qualifiers is my dad. But I know now that being an Al-Anon stuff, you can have a qualifier that's an Al-Anon. Because just because they don't drink doesn't mean that they're any better. One of my old sponsor used to tell me that, even just for myself, that you can't expect to be surrounded by mud and come out clean. And I was like, no, but I am clean. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, my whole family drinks. I I grew up, I have a very big family. I'm Hispanic and Native American and Spanish. So if anybody who's mixed knows how that is, you automatically feel different from other people. Because I grew up in a mainly Hispanic community. And even in elementary school, I was different because I didn't speak Spanish, but I looked white, but I wasn't white. So I just kind of had this really great group of friends who I'm still friends with today. And so from there on, I always felt different for some reason. So I have a very big family. Almost all of them drink or use. Most of my dad's family uses. Some of them have died from the disease. And from my mom's side, most of them, I'd say, are either Al-Anons or alcoholics. So from there on, that said, first time I ever drank was with my family. First time I ever used was with my family. And I remember the first time that I got drunk was with one of my cousins. And I remember from that first time I got drunk off of like beer and boonies. And I remember there was older guys there and they were trying to like give me more to drink. And my cousin told me, go in the room. She's like, you're too drunk. They're trying to hook up with you just because you're pretty and you look older. Go to bed. I was like, no, I'm not drunk. I don't know what you're talking about. And then I went to bed and I fell asleep. But so from that first time, I knew that like I could be taken advantage of drinking. But I like drinking. So I always made sure, and I always kind of describe myself like this, that I'm a very Al-Anon alcoholic. Because I always made sure that I only got to a point to where I could take care of myself. So I'm always very smart, but I knew how much to drink to get to where I wanted to be, to just make myself feel better. And that was when I was 13. So going on, I came into Alateen when I was 14. A lot was going on. One of my favorite aunts passed away. My parents filed bankruptcy. We were in a smaller house. I was just starting high school. And I remember one time reading one of my health classes, you know, reasons why people can be depressed. And I was like losing a pet and like losing a family member, moving, starting a new school. And I was like, okay, I lost my pet. I lost a family member, moving, going to a new school. And then I was like, okay, no wonder I'm depressed. So my mom went through this whole therapy craze, you know, to make sure we weren't scarred too much. And my dad had gotten a couple DUIs and suggested Alateen to us. So this is all kind of going on. I have my alcoholic disease and my Al-Anon kind of meshing together. So kind of the story goes with how I was able to find AA at such a young age. I loved Alateen from the first day I started. I sat back like way in the corner with my sister. And you know, Alateens, or have ever been to a Al-Anon convention or Alateen convention, they always make sure that you do not leave without a hug. So they didn't let me leave without a hug. And I just remember like how big and warm their hugs are, and they just like pick you up off the ground and spun me around, and I was like, I don't even know you. And I was just like, okay, you know, but everybody just seemed so genuinely happy in spite of their problems. I was like, you know, maybe this could work for me. So eventually, a couple years later in Alateen, I got a sponsor. And in the midst of all this, you know, being in high school, I always took on a lot more, like just a lot for a teenager to take on. I'm the oldest. And I always, like with everything that was going on in my household, I always felt that I had to take care of everything, like take care of my brother and sisters and, you know, keep the house clean because my mom was going through a lot too. I mean, just my family was crazy. They were crazy. They had to get restraining orders on each other because it was that crazy. And I'm not even going to go into the details of it, but obviously they had a reason to get those restraining orders, which is for the better. And I was one of those kids that I was so happy that my parents weren't together anymore. I was like, thank God they're not together anymore. Like, maybe now they're not going to try to kill each other. Because they tried to kill each other. Like, we had helicopters flying around our house one day because my dad has guns. And he was like, I'm going to fucking kill you, bitch. And the only reason why he didn't is because my Uncle Angel was there. And he, like, held him back. And my mom left and took us to a hotel for a couple of days. That's, like, before they even separated. Before knives were drawn. So, anyways, that's, like, you know, I was happy that they weren't together. But I barely ever saw my dad. I didn't see him for a couple months at a time. And I was happy I didn't see him. When I used to have to go with him, one time I made a huge scene at the market because we had no food in our refrigerator, so he took us to the market. And I was crying, and I didn't know why. I had my mom go pick me up. And I just remember crying and crying and crying. And one of my aunts came over, and she was like, I was like, you know, money isn't everything. Because he used to just, like, we would barely see him. And then he would come, and he would get us stuff and think that it was going to be better. And I was so pissed off. Like, I knew that I was worth more than just that. And I just wanted him to spend some time and, like, get to know me and, you know, something. But so I was going through a lot as a teenager. I'm very emotional. My whole family knows me. I'm extremely emotional, even though on the outside I don't show it to people. It's part of the reasons why I drink. Used to drink. And I just remember my aunt saying, you know, just let him buy you the stuff, Raquel. Like, just, you know, take it for what it's worth. And I was like, fuck that. Like, I don't care about the money. Like, it's not important to me. And I learned a lot of values because being able to go to Alateen, I knew that I was worth more than, like, what money could buy and that I was a good person. So, I mean, growing up in the disease, it's not easy because I was going against myself in my head, growing up and what I was seeing around me, and I knew it was wrong. I knew that things were going on, and I knew that they were crazy, but they were going on. And I couldn't differentiate just things, like how I was supposed to be treated and how to take care of myself. I didn't know how. So coming into Alateen, I was able to have those struggles, and now I can see today that all those battles that I went through were such a blessing because now, like, I'm 22 and I have boundaries with people and I know how to take care of myself and I'm living on my own now and I'm paying my bills and, you know, I'm taking, like, you know, getting haircuts and manicures. And I mean, that's such a blessing for me because we used to not have food in our refrigerator and I can get a haircut and, like, manicures and pay for that myself and have food in my refrigerator at my apartment. Like, wow. I count my blessings every single day. So back to my alcoholism. I always loved to party. Even from when I was younger in elementary school, I always liked to go on these little outings with my friends and do things like that. So I started drinking a lot when I was like 16 years old. And I always remember going out, and if I would have this family problem at home, I would just be thinking to myself when I would be drinking, okay, like, I'm just gonna forget about this, I'm gonna forget about that. So by the time I was done forgetting about everything, I was, like, pretty drunk. So it's like I had a cup of something for everything that I wanted to forget about and just not deal with because it was so much stress. Like, I started working at a young age to, you know, to afford the things that, like, my parents couldn't give to me. And the thing is, even though my dad wanted to give me things sometimes, I didn't want anything from him. I don't know. It was just my thinking, my way of thinking. I didn't want anything from him, so he couldn't hold it against me. And I realized today that it really is like that, because if he did something for me, then I need to act a certain way with him. And no, I don't, if you're not treating me the way that I deserve to be treated. So I turned 18, and I started going out clubbing a lot. I was smoking a lot of pot. And it's funny, because I never really thought I was a pothead, because all the people that I smoked pot with smoked, like, every single day, and I only smoked every couple of days. So, like, I wasn't a pothead. But then, like, I remember one time, like, I always knew because of Alateen, and, like, my sponsor would tell me, you know, Raquel, you know, just, I'm not saying you're an alcoholic, but, you know, you do have the gene. And I'm like, what are you talking about, the gene? Like, it's bogus. Like, it's not real. But now I know today that, like, it is real. And, you know, there is a point that, you know, that casual drinking or social drinking can just, like, go into alcoholism. And I never really hit a bottom on the outside. I mean, I might have had my ears stretched and my nose pierced and, like, a bunch of holes in my body, but, like, I was still working, I was still going to school, I still was, like, okay on the outside, I still, you know, I took pretty good care of myself, I thought, you know. So, and I remember talking to different people about, you know, that I think I'm an alcoholic. And they're like, what are you talking about, Raquel? Like, you're still going to school, you're still working. And I just remember, like, no, I really think I'm an alcoholic. And there was a teacher I had in high school who coincidentally was in NA, because I wrote a paper one time on Alateen. And eventually we got really close, and I met with her. I was telling her, you know, I think I might be an alcoholic. And she was like, you're just going through your college phase, you know, it's normal. Like, everybody does that at your age. And I was like, no, like, you don't understand. Like, when I drink, it's different. Like, I don't get drunk like other people. I always seem to be the most sober one out of everybody. And I always hear, like, these AA women talking about how they'd like to drink like a lady. And no, I drink like a man. Like, I would be drinking with my guy friends, and I would be like, you better take this shot here. I was like, I already took two. They're like, come on, Raquel, I'm already drunk. I was like, no, I'm taking two, and you're taking one. Don't be a little pussy. Take that right now. And I was like a man. Like, and it's funny, they all still remember it till this day. Like, I had a boyfriend at the time, and, like, I outdrank everybody. And it's funny, though, because I outdrank everybody, but I was still more sober than anybody. And I just took my alcohol like it was water. I remember my sister would be drinking with me sometimes, and she'd be puking on the sidewalk. And I would be like, dude, you barely drink anything. Like, what's your problem? And, like, we would go home, and it's so funny because, like, my mom always thought she knew when I was drunk. Every time I was really drunk, she didn't say anything. But when I was sober, she would be in my face about something. And I'd just be like, what? Like, oh, my God, like, I'm not even drunk right now, and you're yelling at me. Like, what's your, like, if you only knew. Like, I was drunk yesterday, and you didn't say anything. So I just thought it was funny. Because sometimes, like, I did tell my sponsor sometimes, like, when I was in high school, you know, she's yelling at me. She's like, Raquel, but you don't get caught when you are drinking. So it's like, you know, what? It's a coin toss, you know, and she's just going to be like that no matter what. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. I guess I can't do anything about it. I am making my decisions. So, and that's what I loved. Like, my sponsor never told me, like, what to do or how to be or anything like that. I mean, she did make suggestions, and when I called her crying, like, at any time of the day or I needed her, she was there for me. So that was when I was in high school, though. I'm kind of going back and forth. But, so, yeah, when I first went, I had a friend that I was clubbing with, like, all the time, and we decided that we were going to go to AA, and we're going to get better. Mind you, this wasn't the first time that I was going to get sober or quit drinking. I'm Catholic, so you have this thing called Lent, where you quit something for 40 days and 40 nights. In high school, I would quit smoking pot and drinking for those 40 days just to tell myself I could stop. So I was more so like your periodic drinker. I didn't like go to school with a flask in my purse or anything like that. Like, I never really spent a lot of money on it because I always knew in my head I'm not going to like use all my money on drinks or alcohol or pot. So I always make sure I was partying so that it would be provided for me. And I always had like really pretty friends who always flirted with the bartender, so I'd always get free everything. And it's funny though, because I was never one of those girls who's like used my looks to like get stuff, because I hated men. I'm not a lesbian or anything, I just hated men. I think part of it might have had to do with my dad, but so I always had pretty friends doing it for me. So I ended up going to a meeting with this amazing friend who she ended up going to rehab, but I was able to get the program, and mind you, like, the first time I went and I got sober a week later, like, because I got sober, right? I went to the AA meeting, I was going to stop, I got my chip. A week later, I went to a concert with one of my friends, and she was the kind of person, like, when she was sober, she would be like, I'm so proud of you, Raquel, like, that's really something to look up to, and blah, blah, blah. But when we were out at that concert, she was like, oh, Raquelita, she's like, I got this weed. She's like, come on. She's like, ooh, look at these drinks she made. So, like, yeah, I drank and I smoked that day a week after I got sober. And I just remember it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same like it was before. And they say, like, once the seed is planted, and it was always planted. Like, ever since I was an L-teen, it was always planted in there. And I always felt uncomfortable drinking because I knew in the back of my head, like, I can't be an alcoholic. So, like, I would tell myself, like, I can't be an alcoholic. That's why I would make sure that I wouldn't black out because I wasn't an alcoholic. That's why I would quit for Lent, too, to prove to myself that I wasn't. I quit smoking pot a couple of times because, you know, that wasn't a problem. But I always ended up, I remember I would be at school that day and be like, I quit, you know, I'm not going to be smoking pot anymore, blah, blah, blah. And then that night I would go to, like, a concert or a show, like a house show that my friends were playing at, and I would be smoking, and I'm like, I know I said I wouldn't smoke anymore, but it's Kush. So it's like I couldn't say no. But, anybody knows, it's just really good weed. But so I'm like, I couldn't say no. So that concert a week after I decided to get sober, and I remember this one time I heard a speaker, and he would say, you know, he heard this guy speaking, and he said, you know, whenever you're drinking now, when you're drinking at the end of that bottle, I want you to see my face when you're drinking. And he's like, I couldn't fucking drink again, because every time I would drink, I would see that guy's fucking face. And he couldn't do it anymore. So, oh yeah, my time's almost done. So I got back in the day after that, which was September 17th, 2004 or 5. I just celebrated my third birthday. And I went through my 21st birthday sober. And not like it ever mattered, you know, before, because I started when I was 13. But, you know, I have so many gifts because of this program. I got sober, you know, 3 years ago. My grandma passed away in January. And for almost 2 years, I got to be present and be with my grandma and spend time with her and get to know her and her get to know me. And, you know, she passed away, and I just felt so grateful in my heart and so happy that I was able to really know my grandma and realize what an amazing person she was and just receive so many endless gifts from her because she had just the biggest heart in the world. Like, every time I would go to her house, she would, like, I mean, Al-Anon, of course, she would make sure I'd leave with something, whether it was, like, sugar or, like, quarters for her laundry or anything. And, you know, I was able to, like, give her flowers on Valentine's Day and, like, give her perfume for Mother's Day, like, her favorite perfume. And I remember I gave it to her, and she cried. She was like, oh, my God, Mija, you know, sometimes, you know, I wasn't able to get this because, you know, I didn't have money. And I was able to give that to her from my heart. And she used, we got to get everything that we gave her. After she passed away, we got everything that we gave her back. And she used almost all of it, all the perfume I gave her. And that just made me so happy that I know she's still here today, and I just want to share this really big miracle that happened. There's a sign out there that says Freddie Fender performing here, and that was her favorite person in the world. And I was like, oh my God, I was like, her spirit is like so here with me. And, you know, being sober, I'm able to like recognize those gifts and show up for myself and show up for people that I love and be here and be of service and to show all my little cousins, you know, that you don't have to get pregnant before you're 18 and you can graduate and you can go to college and you can have dreams, because especially coming from Hispanic culture, like, I mean, that's just the way that it is. And I don't have to succumb to, you know, this the culture and like the environment that I grew up in, and I can set the standard and, you know, be an inspiration to myself and be an inspiration to like everybody else who's younger in my life as well. So thank you so much for letting me speak today.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sonia.
Hi, Sonia.
Hi, I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I'm here because I love an alcoholic, and thanks to this program and the steps, I'm here because I love myself today, too. And, you know, I'm feeling touched, you know, because I see a lot of faces here that, you know, were here when I first walked in, and that's going to keep me really honest. My friend here, you know, is just like a reminder, really honest. And, you know, I'll share, you know, how I came in, and that sums up kind of the past as well. But when I came in, actually next Saturday, the 27th, is our 8-year anniversary. And so it's exciting. And when we came in, you know, it was fall, and it was a cold fall night, really windy, and that has something to do with it. But on Monday, it was a Tuesday when I came into the program, but on Monday I was in court with my now ex-husband, he was my husband at the time, getting restraining orders on each other, and that was a Monday. And I'm going to, I'll tell this little story that we were in there. I went to get a restraining order on him because of stuff I'm not going to share about the other person, but when he was in there, he said, but Your Honor, yeah, I did that, but she, and then he went down the list of what I did, and I'll share one of those, because I had just taken all of his things, expensive things, to the Goodwill. And I didn't burn it in a car. I took it all to the Goodwill. And so the judge said, you know what? I want you both have a restraining order on each other. Stay away from each other. And so when we were in with the mediator to discuss the children, the mediator suggested Al-Anon. I mean, no. She suggested Alateen for my children because we were discussing the children. And fortunately, I will say that he and I have never argued about our children. Everything else, but never about what was best for our children. So, and that mediator had said, and there's a meeting for you too. And I said, okay, I'll call and I'll take my kids. So I went home, you know, being a good, you know, mother who wants good things for her kids. I went and called the central office and they said, because they asked me the ages of the children and where I lived, and they told me to go to Burbank at Tuesday night, the very next day, and they said there's a preteen because the ages of your children, you have two in preteen and two in Alateen. And our four children, you know, I had them in 5 years. They're all very close together. So, and at the time, they were 8, 9 through 14, right around there. So when I called central office and they said, and there's an Al-Anon meeting there for you too. And I said, oh no, I'm just going to take my kids. Okay, so I go to the meeting and I'm going to take my youngest, who was, you know, kind of afraid. She didn't understand where I was taking her. And I said, you know, I'll stay in here with her. And then the Alateen sponsor, bless her, you know, she doesn't remember this, but I remind her because we're dear friends today, said, there's a meeting for you downstairs. And I said, oh, no, I'll stay here. She's like, no, you go downstairs. And so she kicked me out, basically. And it was really cold that night. And I had on a tank top, but then a sweater over. And my little one was cold. So being a good mom and Al-Anon, I gave her my sweater and I'll freeze. You know, that's okay. So I'm going downstairs and people are telling me, you know, oh, are you looking for Al-Anon? I was like, no, you know, I'm and they turned the lights off. They usually don't, but for some reason they turned the lights off in the hallway that night. So I figured I'll go to, you know, wait in my truck for them for an hour and a half. And because, I mean, I had this really nice van and nice cars and all of this, but at this time I was driving an old truck that had a broken windshield and it was freezing outside. It was so cold. So I figured, okay, I'm going to go back in there. So I went, I'm sitting in the hallway and people are coming out, you know, are you looking for Al-Anon? I was like, what if I have this written all over me? Why is everybody telling me that? I have no idea. So anyhow, I see that I was guided by a power greater than myself. You know, I was guided by the light, by the warmth, by the laughter. I heard people. And I don't remember my legs, walking my legs myself. But I went into that room and the meeting hadn't even started. So I just sat there, and that meeting was designed for me that night. Like, it was all about me, you know. Sometimes we could think it's all about us, but it really was. From it was a speaker night, and the leader was sharing about a meditation practice that I was familiar with, because I'd been on all kinds of spiritual journeys, which I'm very grateful for. Then the speaker was sharing, you know, horrendous stuff. And I know that the gift for me of that speaker was her horrendous stuff that she was sharing. She was saying it in the past tense, and that was my present. And with my arrogance, I remember her saying that she ran to the police station and she didn't have her shoes on, and the kids were at the house, and she was saying, you got to help me go get my kids. And I'm thinking, okay, I had my shoes on and my kids were with me. So if, you know, I think in my mind, if she, you know, could get to this fabulous place where she was, then I probably could. You know, what is it that she did? And all I kept hearing was the steps. Now, I had just enough sanity to know 1 + 1 = 2. She was there. If I do that, I'll be okay. So I, you know, the thing is, at the end of the meeting, when you hold hands and say a prayer and they say keep coming back, I felt something, a warmth go through me. It was just really, you know, I'm talking very spiritually because it really was. Well, I gathered the kids, we went home, and the next day I woke up, which that alone is a miracle, because for 5 months I hadn't slept the night through, and I hadn't eaten, and I woke up and I was hungry, and I heard a really strange sound in the house, really strange when I woke up. I heard the kids laughing, and I thought, you know what, I mean, it was a miracle. I had, you know, they say stay for your miracles, my first miracle. And I was so aware that I had slept, I was hungry, and there was laughter. I mean, I couldn't wait to go back the next week. I mean, it was just incredible. So, you know, what I did is Oh, I went back because I had to take the kids. You know, it was important. I had to take the kids back because this is good for them. And that's what, you know, so we all started the exact same date. And I heard that if I get better, the kids will get better. And I'll tell you, that's just what motivated me. I wanted to get so much better so the kids could get better. And I got a sponsor right away, got started on the steps, and I started, you know, my first step, and then that sponsor, she was moving. And then I just felt, oh my God, you know, really, like she was abandoning me, because for the first time, someone I was trusting. And then she said, I'm letting you know ahead of time, I'm going to be moving, so you know, you need to go, you know, look for another sponsor. And she knew I just wanted it. And this was just a few months. And, like 2 months only. And so I asked somebody who was her sponsor to be my sponsor, and she said, I'm really busy, and, you know, I don't know if you need a lot of time. I'm sure I had high maintenance written all over me. and so I said, okay. And then I found somebody, and that new sponsor was an absolute God shot, because I had two women in line from that meeting, because it was a very powerful meeting, and I couldn't decide which one. And I know that somehow I said, God help me, which one? And it turned out one of them was the leader. And she was unavailable. So the other one said, you know, how are you doing? Good to see you. And then I said, we became a sponsor, you know, just like so quickly. And that was perfectly divine, because that other one would have been too black belt for me. But it turned out that one was her sponsor. And so I got the benefit of her, and I could call her, and I did call her all the time. But I didn't have to have her be my sponsor, which some of you know, that was, you know, it was a win-win. So I started, you know, being of service right away. And being of service was even someone asking me to get up and read the traditions. I said, oh no, I can't do that. And then they said, can't you read? And I was like, oh, I can read, because I could talk, you know, and, you know, on and on. But the thing is, I said, oh no, that was a Tuesday. And I said, I'm going to be in court this week. I'm a mess. I can't do it. And she was like, you can do it. And so, I mean, it was a miracle. I really thought it was the very first time I got up and to read the traditions. So, and then my sponsor suggested I be a door greeter for the month. And I said, you know, sponsors, as a sponsor now, you know these things after being there a while. I thought I didn't have anything to give, but what I learned from that time, because it was December when, you know, like again, I was quite new, I was getting the hugs that I needed, because I was in and out of a lot of chaos. And, you know, suddenly, you know, having these four kids on my own, and for me, I'll say it was just a lot of humility as far as, you know, the finances, because we'd, you know, a friend of mine here says, you know, that I was a little angry. I was like, oh, no, I was a lot angry, you know, at that time, because my husband, my ex-husband and I, we had started a business and we'd become very successful and got, you know, this great, gorgeous house and, you know, all of the nice things that go along with that. And then, you know, we lost it, and then I had to move back to one of our first homes. And I was just so ungrateful, and I had to learn how to be in gratitude for that house, even though it didn't feel like it at the time. And but you know, I was feeding the kids things like, you know, Kool-Aid and cup of noodles, things like that. But I wouldn't tell any of my sisters or anybody what was going on. And when I was rolling in the money, and you know, it was the sweet life, I would go and pay for everybody's everything, and we would be somewhere, and I would secretly take care of the check. But I couldn't, you know, when they found out, they were just so horrified that I hadn't told them, and, you know, just went and bought, you know, carloads of groceries, you know, for our home and so forth. And, you know, in this book, the From Survival to Recovery, page 269 is Al-Anon Gifts. And this, you know, I don't have too long to share here, but what I'd like to say is that these Al-Anon Gifts, and I won't read the whole thing, just the beginning, it says, if we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. And that happened for me. I mean, everything has made just a complete, you know, turnaround. And I had thought, part of me thought that when I worked the steps, I would lose. Like, I wouldn't be the same me. But I'm still me. I'm just a whole lot healthier and happier, and my life is better. I was afraid I was going to lose myself in the steps, but I didn't at all. And so, it also says, you know, we will come to feel and come to know the vastness of our emotions, but we will not be slaves to them. That is one of the biggest gifts I have learned in here, because I used to either be so dramatic and, like, you know, I'd be crying or in depression or angry, totally feel the vastness of it with no serenity, or totally deny. I don't have any feelings at all. So now what I do is I feel the feelings in a healthy way, and then I have a really good life. And, you know, like they've shared about my mom passing away in January. You know, that's, you know, one of the things I got to feel all the, you know, the feelings and go through it, but show up. Like, I totally showed up. And so, you know, just fast forward to cover on that a little bit, because with my mother, you know, who is just, has a big, huge heart, very loving and kind, and oftentimes it felt like smothering, you know, and I used to, like, rebel against that and have issues with that. But thanks to program, I totally reconciled all that and looked at the gifts of that and to see it for the blessings that it was. And we're like this, you know, we're just so totally like this, and there's no reason for us not to be other than my attitude, which was just kind of ungrateful, you know, and I got to see that. And, you know, when my mom had become ill and went into the hospital in December of last year, somehow I was, you know, with the program and doing the 11 step every day, turning my will and my life over, being powerless, which I did not like, you know, was there every day with her and yet was at a meeting every day. And then people, and when I was with her on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, there was nowhere else in the world that I would rather have been than with her. And I was so angry that all the nurses, because I have a lot of siblings, a lot of nieces and nephews that are young teens and so forth, and we were all there around the clock and, you know, taking turns and so forth. And the nurses and the doctors kept saying, you guys are so lucky, you guys are so lucky. And if one more of them wanted to, said that, I wanted to just kill them. I mean, literally kill them. How could they be saying, I'm lucky with my mom here dying? But when they would explain, like, how they were in another country or they weren't there, you know, I got to be in gratitude. And so it really changed me to being into gratitude with her. And my siblings, who either drink or are just nuts, you know, because we all come from the same place, when, you know, when it, I don't want to stay too long on it, but when it came time for my mom, as much as they think I'm too sensitive and, you know, emotional or whatever, when it came time for it, my only brother, there's seven girls and one boy, my only brother and my oldest sister were in the room because everybody was exhausted and had went home and they were going to come back. I was able to hold my mom in my arms while she transitioned. And they couldn't. They're the tough ones. They're the strong ones, and I'm not. And I was the one who was able to. And it was totally because of the program. And when I would come out, you know, in the hospital, you can't have your phone on. I would hear love calls on my, you know, on my answering machine. I had the program, and they didn't. And during that whole time, there was a lot of personalities before principles, and then people were drinking and doing, you know, this and that. And I am staying on it, even though I didn't plan to. And one thing that I will share, too, that was just to show you, like, how close my mom and I were, when we decided to take off the respirator, I fainted. I couldn't breathe. So it was like, you know, my brother said, you know, that's too close, you know, and they were really and they were really concerned for me, you know, like this whole year. And the thing is, because of the program, it's just I'm okay. I'm good. I am just really, and not like pretend good, I'm really good. And I'm just so grateful every day. So the thing with, you know, the kids going through the program, and I'm glad that I was able to, you know, I was asked to be of service on a convention on the board, and so that kept me there for the, like, right away. When my first year in program, I was able to, I stayed. It was like, I guess I had to stay for that first year, and then I got signed up for another year. So I'd really do it not only one day at a time, but one year at a time. And when I was in program a couple of years, one of my other daughters, who is an AA qualifier as well, I discovered that she was a qualifier, which I hadn't known because they were just an Alateen. And I was absolutely devastated, and I was angry. And I called my sponsor, you know, of course, when I found out, and I said, you know, how, this is cruel. This is, how could God do this, you know, to me when, you know, we've been in Alateen. I've been in Al-Anon and working so hard, and they were in Alateen. And she said that it was a blessing. You know, I couldn't see it that way, that, because I did not take it well. And I said, I can't imagine how not well I would have taken it if I hadn't had Al-Anon at all. So I guess I took it kind of okay. And I said, you know, God's not, where is God? God's not even looking out for me. And she said, I think he is, because he brought you here and prepared you, because this was going to happen either way. And then, and that was, you know, because this is my first daughter and then my second one, and then I have my son and then another daughter. And then when I found out this one was a qualifier, gosh. run, you know, I had to, I ran, I didn't walk to the parent meetings. And, you know, when they speak, when parents would speak, or I'd been to a parent meeting and been a leader, I didn't really listen to it because it didn't apply. It wasn't, you know, but then it did apply. So I became, you know, an ACA, because my dad drinks and he doesn't qualify himself as an alcoholic, and I don't think he is, but I will say that the drinking did affect me growing up, mainly in the way of fear, because it was loud and angry. And so, you know, that affected me. So I can, let me see how I can wrap up here. It's in the promises, it says that we will discover new hidden talents. We will come to feel the vastness. You know, I shared that, the emotions. But something about joy, fulfillment, and wonder. And every day I really am filled with joy, fulfillment, and wonder. And, you know, I started college a couple of years ago, and what was really neat is two of my daughters, we were in classes together at the same time. And I said, that's not the way I would have planned it, but it was really kind of fun and exciting. And I had to stay out of, did you get your homework done? You know, and just, let's do a little study group. And they're like, Mom, you're too happy in this, you know, leave us alone. And somehow they could, you know, stay up late and do well in a test where I have to work really hard. But, you know, having to work really hard, and I did that, you know, one day at a time, and was able to get my first degree recently. And I'm continuing, I'm still going. And I'm glad, too, that I get to set an example, you know, perhaps, that it's never too late. And just with the recently with my all my kids moving into their own place, I'm living on my own for the first time, one day at a time. And I learned that I get to do, and as much as it's exciting, it's new. I have never been on my own. I went from a huge family, marriage, all the kids. I have never been, and the serenity is great, but yet it's new. You know, it's new, and it's just so sweet because people in program will call me and say, how are you doing? You doing okay? Just thinking of you, because, you know, I like to share about where I'm at today. And again, where I'm at today is just filled with gratitude for, you know, the fellowship, everybody who came before me and loved me until I learned to love myself. And I think that's it. So thank you very much for asking us to lead here.